From KPFK Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The confirmation hearings for Donald Trump's Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh got off to a fiery start on Tuesday morning as the Senate Judiciary Committee gathered in front of press and the public. Here are the opening minutes of the hearing with Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley, who forced the hearings to start at an unprecedented speed, being interrupted by Democratic Senators Kamala Harris and Richard Blumenthal.
I welcome everyone to this confirmation hearing on the nomination of Brett Kavanaugh.
Mr. Chairman.
To serve as Associate Justice.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized for a question before we proceed. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to be recognized to ask a question before we proceed. The committee received just last night, less than 15 hours ago, 42,000 pages of documents that we have not had an opportunity to review or read or analyze.
You're out of order. I'll proceed.
We cannot possibly move forward, Mr. Chairman.
I extend
this hearing.
A very warm welcome
we have not
to
been
Judge
given
Kavanaugh,
an opportunity to have a meaningful
his wife,
hearing
Ashley,
on the nominee.
Their two daughters.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with my colleague, Senator Harris. Mr. Chairman,
Judge
we received 42,000 documents that we haven't
and
been able
to
review last night, and we believe this hearing should be postponed.
I know this is an exciting day for all of you here,
Mr. Chairman,
and you're rightly proud
Mr. Chairman,
of
Chairman, if we cannot be recognized, I move to adjourn.
The American people
Mr. Chairman, I move
get to
adjourn.
Hear directly from Judge Kavanaugh later this afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, I move to adjourn. Mr. Chairman, we have been denied real access to the documents we need to advise.
Mr. Chairman, regular order is called for.
Which turns this hearing into a charade and a mockery of our norms.
Well,
and Mr. Chairman, I therefore move to adjourn this hearing.
Okay.
Those are the sounds of cheering from members of the public at the confirmation hearing of Brett Kavanaugh. Several women, including Women's March leader Linda Sarsour, interrupted the proceedings at that point and were dragged out by police. Those are women protesting the confirmation hearings of Brett Kavanaugh on Tuesday morning, just minutes after the hearings began. The war of words continued among members of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Here is an exchange between Senators Cory Booker and Chuck Grassley.
What are we trying to hide by not having the documents out front? What is with the rush? What are we hiding by not letting those documents come out? Sir, this committee is a violation of the values that we as a committee have striven for, transparency. We are rushing through this process in a way that is unnecessary. And I appeal for the motion to at least be voted on.
Mr. Chairman.
At least let's have a vote, because when we wrote you a letter on August 24th asking to have a meeting on this issue, you denied us even the right to meet. So here we are having a meeting. Let's at least debate this issue. Let's at least call this for a vote. I appeal to your sense of fairness and decency, your commitments that you've made to transparency. This violates what you have even said and called for, sir.
You spoke about my decency and integrity, and I think you are taking advantage of my decency and integrity. So.
That's the voice of Senator Chuck Grassley on Tuesday morning as the contentious Brett Kavanaugh hearings took place in Washington, D.C. Joining me now to analyze how the hearings are going is Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She recently wrote the piece Kavanaugh Scorns International Law and Loves Executive Power for Truthout. Welcome to the program, Marjorie.
My pleasure, Sonali. Thanks for having me.
So the hearings got off to a very, very fiery start. I just played some clips for our audience of the exchanges between Senators Chuck Grassley and Kamala Harris, Cory Booker and Richard Blumenthal. And Democrats so far seem to be holding holding strong and paying attention to what their base wants. Are you heartened by the opposition that they are showing, or the level of opposition they're showing Grassley in his unprecedented fast-paced hearings for Brett Kavanaugh?
Yes, I really am. The Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee are showing real backbone. They postponed the hearing on Tuesday an hour and a half, didn't get started according to Grassley's agenda, because they made a motion to continue the hearing until the rest of Kavanaugh's record was made available. The Republicans are trying to sanitize Kavanaugh's record and cover up information that bears on what he did for 3 years, 36 months during the Bush campaign when he was staff secretary. And I think the Democrats have been very strong. I'm very proud of them. I'm also proud of Code Pink for exercising their First Amendment free speech rights in the hearing and holding their feet to the fire.
That's right. There were a number of protesters. In fact, throughout the first several minutes, as Chuck Grassley was speaking, you could just hear so much activity in the audience of those who had gathered, people who were protesting, who were saying, stop Kavanaugh. Women's March leader Linda Sarsour was also among them, and she was dragged out. And as you mentioned, Code Pink. So there was also a poll that was released showing that Kavanaugh has the lowest support of any Supreme Court nominee in recent memory. But if you just listen to Chuck Grassley, and of course, if you just pay attention to Fox News, it sounds like Republicans are perfectly within their rights to do these hearings the way they're doing them, and that Democrats have all the information they need, including 40,000 documents, 40,000 pages of documents that were released to them.
Those 40,000 pages that were released to them last night, Sonali, were released last night.
So that's Monday night, yeah, the day before the hearing.
Yes, the night before the first day of the hearing, they were released. And who can go through that many documents in any meaningful way that quickly? I mean, it's clear that there's a cover-up. This has never happened before. There's always been a bipartisan cooperation in making sure that the Senate Judiciary Committee has the entire record so that they can vet and question a person who will serve for the rest of his or her life on the highest court in the land. And of course, we know that Kavanaugh is going to provide the fifth vote to radically move the Supreme Court to the right. So this is very, very worrisome that they are covering up and sanitizing all of these documents, some 90%+ of his record, and not making it available even to the committee, no less to the public.
Ari Berman, who writes for The Nation, said that only about 3% of the Kavanaugh papers have actually been released. But Chuck Grassley says, we're applying the same standards as we applied to Elena Kagan. And he cites, you know, example after example, suggesting that Kavanaugh is getting the exact same treatment as all other Supreme Court nominees.
Well, that's not true. And this is the first time that a president, and that is Trump, of course, has asserted executive privilege to keep those documents secret and covered up. During the Reagan administration, when Chief Justice Rehnquist had his confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court, Reagan started to assert executive privilege to hold back some documents. And in a bipartisan move, both Democrats and Republicans came together and said, no, there's nothing to hide. You don't need to assert executive privilege. And so he didn't. So this is the first time that it's happened. And I guess it's not surprising that it's happened with Donald Trump.
One of the most important things that has been raised is the fact that Kavanaugh seems to have a different interpretation of executive power than other constitutional lawyers and possibly judges as well. And that was also raised on day one of the hearing, how inappropriate it is that you have these hearings for a person who could be the deciding vote in a case regarding the president, and that this is a person being nominated by the president. Were you, you know, how important is it for the American public to hear this massive conflict of interest between Trump and Kavanaugh?
It is a massive conflict of interest because Trump's fate may ultimately come to the Supreme Court, and you have Kavanaugh, who will be beholden to Trump for this appointment after, of course, being vetted by the very right-wing conservative Heritage Foundation and Federalist Society. Kavanaugh has said that he thought that U.S. versus Nixon was wrongly decided. That was a Supreme Court case, a unanimous Supreme Court case, that said Nixon did not have absolute executive privilege to withhold the tapes that the Watergate Committee wanted. And also, a very disturbing thing came out that I had not heard. Kavanaugh evidently said, and I quote, "The president may decline to enforce a statute that regulates private individuals when the president deems the statute unconstitutional, even if a court has held or would hold the statute constitutional." That means that he is saying the president's above the law, that if the president signs a bill that Congress passes and attaches a signing statement saying, "I'm only going to follow those parts of this law Congress just passed that I agree with, that I think are constitutional," that Kavanaugh said that's okay, even if a court has said that that statute's constitutional. That, Sonali, is the definition of fascism. All power in the hands of the executive.
Now, In the piece that you wrote for Truthout, Marjorie, you examined what Kavanaugh has ruled in the war on terror related cases, so-called, and you said that he's shown uncritical deference to executive power there as well. Can you expand on that?
Yes. In nearly all the so-called war on terror cases that came to the U.S. Court of Appeals since Kavanaugh has been on that court, Kavanaugh deferred to the president, deferred to George W. Bush. In, for example, the case of the Uyghurs, which is a minority group in China, they were held at Guantanamo wrongly. They were determined to be not enemy combatants, and yet the Bush wanted to send them back to China where there was a likelihood that they would be tortured. And Kavanaugh said, "That's not for us to look at. We're going to defer to the president on that." In the Boumediene case, the U.S. Supreme Court said that the president cannot deny Guantanamo detainees the right to challenge their confinement by habeas corpus. And yet, in cases that came before Kavanaugh's court after Boumediene, he tried to neuter or weaken that protection. So he defers blindly to the executive, to the president, and he has also said that he doesn't think that a president should have to answer to criminal or civil charges while he's a sitting president, notwithstanding the Jones case, the Paula Jones case, where President Clinton did have to answer questions in a civil suit brought by Paula Jones. So in nearly every situation, Kavanaugh has shown himself to blindly defer to the executive, which makes a mockery of our separation of powers, of the three co-equal branches of government, legislative, judicial, and executive, that are supposed to check and balance each other under the Constitution.
Now, we don't get that many cases regarding international law or foreign policy before the court. However, on the issue of the rights of people being held at, say, Guantanamo, which I know you've done a lot of work on, those have been cases that potentially could have come before the Supreme Court or have in some way. What sort of role could Kavanaugh as a Supreme Court justice play in U.S. foreign policy?
Well, when you're talking about torture, and of course, Trump has said that he wants to bring back torture, he wants to bring back waterboarding, and worse, waterboarding clearly constitutes torture. Torture is illegal. It's illegal under our federal statutes. It's illegal under the Convention Against Torture, a treaty the United States has ratified, making it part of U.S. law under the Supremacy Clause. It says treaties are the supreme law of the land. And so if Trump decided he wanted to institute a program of torture, or cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment of detainees at Guantanamo or anywhere else, and that came before the Supreme Court, it's very likely that Kavanaugh would defer to Trump. When he was in the Bush administration, He admitted, he actually has admitted this recently, that he had input into the signing statement that Bush attached to the bill when he signed the bill, which was an amendment to the Detainee Treatment Act. It was called the McCain Amendment, saying that cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment are illegal. Of course, they were already illegal, but this reaffirmed it. And Bush attached a signing statement when he signed that the entire bill, the Detainee Treatment Act, he attached a signing statement saying, basically, I'm going to only follow those parts I want to follow, and if we want to engage in this kind of cruel, inhuman treatment, we're going to do it. And Kavanaugh was up to his ears in helping with that signing statement. And when he was asked about it, he gave a completely non-responsive answer. Kavanaugh said, we don't torture. Which totally begs the question. So when it comes to indefinite detention, when it comes to torture, when it comes to other rights of detainees, where international law, which as I said is part of U.S. law, when the U.S. has ratified treaties, I think Kavanaugh is going to defer to the president. He has expressed nothing but disdain for international law. He has confused international law with foreign law. International law, as I've said, is part of U.S. law when the U.S. has ratified a treaty or it is customary international law. Foreign law, on the other hand, is the law of France, the law of Germany, the law of Egypt, which is a very different animal. And foreign law, of course, does not bind the United States. And yet he confuses the two. He has made very derogatory comments about international law, and that dovetails with his position on absolute deference to the executive, especially in times of so-called war, even though, of course, Congress has not authorized war.
And of course, besides international law, there are so many other issues that we have covered on this program, such as the impact that Kavanaugh's appointment would have on women's rights, on climate change, on corporate supremacy over workers' rights, and on and on. Now, one of the issues that that Democrats were raising is that the executive authority to keep some of these documents, or most of these documents, secret has not been properly recognized, that executive privilege to keep them secret hasn't been done. So is there any sort of technicality on which Democrats could force, as the minority party, force the hand of Grassley and the Republicans, as far as you know?
Well, I don't think they're going to have much success there. I think the most that the Democrats and that we, the people, could hope for is that by airing these outrages in Kavanaugh's record and in the Republican cover-up and sanitization of his record, that will appeal to the swing voters. If all the Democrats, and that includes the three Blue Dog Democrats, and only one Republican, that could be Collins or Murkowski, voted against the nomination, then it would fail. Now, all five of those swing voters voted for Gorsuch, and Collins and Murkowski have pledged to uphold Roe v. Wade, to protect reproductive rights, and yet they voted for Gorsuch, knowing that he would probably vote to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, Senator Collins met with Kavanaugh, and he assured her that Roe v. Wade was, quote, settled law, unquote. Everything is settled law until the Supreme Court overrules it. So that was totally meaningless. But Collins and Murkowski are going to have their constituents to answer to when they vote, if and when they vote to confirm Kavanaugh, and he provides the fifth vote to either overturn Roe v. Wade or just chip away at reproductive rights and the right to an abortion, which is the way that Roberts likes to do it. He doesn't like to flatly overrule cases. He likes to chip away at it until there's nothing left of it. And I think that may be what we're going to see with the abortion issue.
Finally, Marjorie, we talked about the spirited protests that have been taking place. We heard some of and watched some of the handful of women who made it into the in the room where the Senate Judiciary Committee's hearing was taking place. But outside that that space, there are scores of women and men, Americans who are gathered, people who are being arrested, who are conducting their protests, exercising their First Amendment rights. How important is it for us to express that? Because the Senate Republicans are going to railroad this through. It feels like one way or another, they're going to push this through. And I suppose we have to look back on this moment and look at what side we were on and know that we're going to be judged by history, right?
That's exactly right. I mean, democracy is messy. And that's what, and remember in 1968, 50 years ago, outside of the Democratic National Convention where there were protests, and that was an iconic period of time, it's very, very important that we protect, that we zealously guard our right to protest and our First Amendment rights. And it warms my heart to know that there are so many protesters outside the hearing. That's exactly the way it should be, because so much is at stake in this Supreme Court confirmation, Sonali, as you have mentioned: environmental rights, reproductive rights, voting rights, affirmative action, money in politics, gay rights, immigrants' rights, executive power, deregulation, on and on and on.
Gun control as well. By the way, Marjorie, there was a moment where Fred Gutenberg, whose daughter was murdered by an assault rifle, went up to the Supreme Court nominee and offered his hand, and Kavanaugh, who I'm assuming knows who this person was, refused to shake his hand. Some have said that Kavanaugh's only job at this hearing is to show what a nice guy he is, but that action to refuse to shake Gutenberg's hand spoke volumes.
That's an outrage. And of course, we know that Kavanaugh voted to uphold the right to have assault weapons. And there's absolutely no reason at all that assault weapons should be legal, other than he's pandering to the NRA, which has put millions and millions of dollars into this campaign. And it's really beyond the pale, Sonali.
Marjorie, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We linked your Truth Out piece from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My guest has been Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She recently wrote the piece, "Kavanaugh Scorns International Law and Loves Executive Power." We've been discussing how day one of the Brett Kavanaugh confirmation hearing went on Tuesday, and we're going to keep bringing you more coverage of the hearings. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now on Instagram at RU with Sonali.